Great. I'm sure they'll appreciate you saying that. We're all waiting for you.
Because you're old.
All right, folks, it's nice to see you. I'm going to call this meeting of the Little Calumet River Basin Development Commission to order for Wednesday, April 21st, 2021, which happens to be the first live meeting since February 2020. So, that being said, would you all please stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Jody, please do roll call.
Tom Wyszlinski.
Present.
Tom Gazdecki.
Present.
Anthony Brodnix.
Present.
Derek Nimitz, absent. Dave Castellanos.
Here.
Ron Ware.
Here.
Robert Ochi.
Here.
LaVon Whitaker.
Present.
William Baker.
Present. Got a quorum. Next up is the approval of the minutes from the Zoom meeting of March 17th, 2021. Any motions, any modifications, what say you?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion to approve the minutes from March 17th, 2021 as presented.
There's a motion to approve the minutes. Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? Be there none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Out there for everybody to see. Welcome back, everybody. This is a $275 million man-made flood control project that, if it isn't done correctly and it's deferred maintenance, there's pictures up there from 2008 shows exactly what happens when you don't pay attention and do the maintenance that's required based upon a man-made structure. We're far better prepared now than we were in 2008. All running through different scenarios as the world continues to change. What we're going to try to continue to do is to do what we have in the past, is engage everybody in the community to try to work together and show that this is a true economic development project, and we're able to do it in such a manner that kind of changes everybody else's perspective and how things have been done in the past. That being said, we're moving on to the finance report, approval of the claims for 2021. We need a motion.
Chairman, I move that we approve the claims for April 21 in the amount of $1,060,247.54.
There's a motion to approve the claims. Is there a second?
Second.
And a second. Is discussion? Mr. Repay, anything?
For $1 million, yes. We have a couple.
We have money now. Have you noticed? That's why the room is full.
Remember those days in 13 when there wasn't. Just to hit some of the highlights of the claims and some interesting projects, Spulwicki and Lopez, we have the final design and work done for the Burr Street closure. That's the closure that has the iron gate that goes underneath the railroad tracks. We have the 408, which is the permit from the Army Corps. The only thing that we're waiting for right now is the contract from Norfolk Southern to do the work. They're going to be the ones that actually do the work. We're going to pay them, and then it's going to be subject, of course, to your approval and to the legal counsel. Earthworks for $576,225. Most of you have been out there. They set the bridge yesterday that spans over the top of the rock riffle. Project's going along well. Project's going along much more ahead of schedule than even the folks from Colorado who helped design it. They'll be in town next week, Tuesday and Wednesday, to review and to make sure that there's everything's being done correctly so far. All the pictures that have been sent their way, they have indicated they are pleased with the outcome. And a lot of this work or a lot of this bill is for a lot of the stone that has been delivered, as well as the bridge abutments and corresponding costs associated with that. And I once again apologize, this was a late add-on. R.A. Oros, which is the Dyer ditch maintenance, if you take 213th and go sort of northwest to the confluence with Hart's ditch, that's about 2 miles of levee area that was cleaned up from trees. I gave you some pictures in there that just gave you some idea of what it was looking like before. It's a major artery that helps drain every place from Sherwood Golf Course to the southeast, all the way to past 30, past Teebles, by Villa Cesare, that whole area. So everything from that area all the way, if you go to Gino's on 30, using food places, probably not the greatest. But
better than bars.
Yeah, well, I could do that too. All that funnels its way through that ditch, so it's a major contributor to Plum Creek, ultimately.
Let me ask you a question on that one, Dan. How did that come to get to this is without an application? Is that something that you eyeballed?
That's our maintenance. We 2 years ago, we did the area from U.S. 30 to 213th, and then now we're going through 213th going forward to clean it out.
Thank you.
So it's just it is a regulated drain. It's something that we explained to the Lake County that we felt was needed to be done, and we do those on occasion, similar to when we go into Deep River and do Deep River, which we will do later this fall, and we'll start floating from, Central, and we'll make ourselves around to Ripley to do that, because we've already started doing that, but as you know, Deep River runs quite a distance, and that hasn't been cleaned in 30 years. So this will be the last time we have to go in and do some of these things. We're pretty aggressive with the cutting back of the trees.
Anything else?
Well,
go ahead.
You've got some other ones. You've got on your agenda the Audubon Society for 151-302, which was a part of our agreement. They'll be here to speak. Better give a description of that. Evans Tree Care, which is the cutting of the trees in Stage 7. Stage 7 has no access to it with any vehicle, so you have to use a crane to pull out all the trees in that area, so it's not as easy as some other clearing operations, so we had to bring a crane out. We did about 5 days of work. That's, if you geographically will tell you, that's between Columbia and Northcott. We still have some more trees to go, but we got a good chunk of them before the... And they're all dying or dead, so just I'm not taking out good, happy trees. These are things that are falling and leaning. And so we got a good amount of them out, and we'll probably revisit that in the fall when the trees are all, all the leaves have fallen, and people don't get as less excited about me taking out dead trees.
Good idea.
Yeah, thanks. I heard that from someone. Yes?
We maybe go through and during the summer months and then mark those trees that are dead so everyone remembers.
They
were dead.
We did a prelim in February. I went with Evans and I said, these are the trees, and realistically, how many 5 days you could do it in. It's complicated because it's on a bike path. It's also complicated because you don't want to take that crane on some of the wet surfaces and it'll sink and we'll, in front of inspections. But we are, and we will probably finish up to, if you're familiar with Walnut Avenue in Hammond, which is about where we'll stop this spring. Anything else?
I found it interesting that the claim that Patrick approved for Earthworks was late add, but Patrick made sure they got their bill in plenty of time.
That's correct. And just for the record, Mr. Paul Daniels reviewed Earthworks' claim along with me to verify to make sure that the quantities matched with the dollar amounts. So it's a large claim, but Jody and I were looking at it early on going, we didn't think we were going to have that much, and then all of a sudden that one came upon. So half a million.
Earlier, speaking of the Earthworks claim, somewhere in the back of it says for new quantities or something, 0.5 for the bridge. I mean, the bridge is set. I know you said we paid for the bridge, but... I didn't really fully understand that.
I believe if on that line item it's considered one, it's a one lump sum, and so they build it at half because of the abutments that were poured for the bridge and the
those were separate abutments, which are separate,
and the screws.
Oh,
so yeah, the other half will be the remaining, probably the approaches.
Roger. Okay.
But we paid for the physical bridge that showed up, I believe, in four separate parts. Okay. We contracted with Contact, which was the bridge maker that did that.
So that charge was just setting.
Right.
Correction.
Correct. If there's any other questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Yeah, Dan.
Yeah.
There's a large bill from the Audubon Great Lakes here, and I see a two-page write-up of what maybe they did or did not do, but I see no backup, and maybe I was confused as far as what our agreement back in 18 really talked about, but can we get some more clarification from them on why I'm seeing tremendous administrative costs, and that wasn't really part of the deal, I didn't think?
Without looking at them, I'm believing that they would hopefully address that. You address that.
But we got claims pending here, and I'm not
if
extremely
you
comfortable with backup documentation.
I would say if the president, would want, he could entertain the motion of having them come up and explain it.
I mean, it's on the agenda, though. It looks okay.
But you have claims to Commissioner Gazecki's point. You have claims before the presentation.
Okay, so, Mr. Chairman, I move to amend my motion to approve the claims in the same amount, $1,060,000, $247.54, subject to appropriate backup justification of any claim that the commission would have questions about.
There's an amended motion. Mr. Wicklin, when you have an amended motion, what's Robert say about this rule?
He says it's okay to do it.
The amendment goes, you vote the amendment first, and then you vote the claims as amended. So,
so we need a second, though.
I second.
You need a second.
I second the amendment.
All right, so there's a motion and a second. So are we still discussing, then we're just opening it up for discussion again, correct?
Yes.
Open it up for discussion again.
So, Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
The reference to the documentation that was originally submitted in terms of the scope of work, or services that was going to be provided, I want to make sure that that is specifically addressed in what is being submitted for the billing. I don't know if it is or isn't, because it's been a while and we're beyond the original time frame that the project was supposed to be submitted. And there wasn't enough checkpoints of submissions in between, so it's kind of hard to say. So if at minimum, that documentation can be referenced in the submission of the report that is accompanying the invoice, that would be very helpful as a start.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I guess I'm confused as to your extension request letter, and I'm not sure we're commingling things here, but your extension request indicated you had what I'll call boots on the ground and physical activity in July. So we went July, August, September, October, November, December, January, February, March, without one bill, without any documentation, with nothing, and then all of a sudden here we are, live in April, and I got $151,000, and it's like I see $38,000 in salaries. And I don't know what ICR stands for, but there's another $20,000 there.
All right, we'll get to that,
but
Commissioner.
I don't know if it's the right time or what, but so that would.
When they do their presentation, they should cover all of those things. Right.
So we got the amended, we got an amendment to approve the claims, and we have a second. Is there any discussion on paying the bills? Either or none. Jody.
Tom Wyszynski.
Yes.
Tom Gazdecki.
Yes.
Anthony Brodnix.
Yes.
Dave Castellanos.
Yes.
Ron Ware.
Yes.
Robert Ochi.
Yes.
LaVon Whitaker.
Yes.
William Baker.
Yes. Paying the bills. Gotta like it. Next up is Project Tracker. Roll it into the executive director's report, Mr. Repay.
I would just, personally, I would vote again because you've amended, and I would prefer you to vote again on the claims as amended with the amendment that was made.
Did we just do that?
That we just did that.
But you voted on the amendment. So he made an amendment. I'm trying to be the parliamentarian. You voted on the amendment.
Hey, Wicklin, you're supposed to keep me out of jail.
Hey, I'm here. I'm here for you. I got you.
The amendment claims.
So so you voted that motion was just on the amendment.
Approve the amendment.
So what the next motion should be is the motion to approve the claims as amended, and that will suffice everything.
Amendment?
Correct. Yes. So just go. You work backwards. So now we need another roll call on claims as amended. It's a technical thing, but it
Robert
keeps bail
his fault.
Yeah, yeah. Been a lot of trouble.
Robert made the rules.
No.
We need to make another vote, which is Ms. Jody.
Correct.
Just a roll call.
So now we're roll calling the approved amended claims.
All right. Tom Ruslinski.
Yes.
Tom Gazdecki.
Yes.
Anthony Broadnax.
Yes.
Dave Castellanos.
Yes.
Ron Ware.
Yes.
Robert Ochi.
Yes.
LaVon Whitaker.
Yes.
William Baker.
Yes. Mr. Repay, thank you for helping us with that.
I promise I was trying to keep you out of jail, right?
You know, it's a full-time job.
Understood. Briefly, what I haven't already talked about, we've talked about Lake Station Rock Ripple. That is ahead of schedule, should be complete by June. I would anticipate much sooner, so long as we don't get any more snow. Spring Park, which is the Artesian Spring, the contract has been, we had some back and forth, and that has been signed and agreed to. I would anticipate the bids to go out in June for that, and it will be completed this year. We already spoke about Burr Street. Katie Marsh Ditch with the Griffith, they had their inspection with the Army Corps in late March, and we're awaiting the response. The only thing that we need to do in conjunction with the city of Griffith, the town of Griffith, is do the inspection of the deep tunnel that runs along Arbor Gas to the outfall. We do it every 5 years. It was due. They had some change in leadership over there, so we will do that, and it's scheduled to be done in June. So just for your information, we may be participating in either doing some Vector truck cleaning of the wells or stuff like that along with them. We have inspections set up for next week for Gary. That starts with Monday the 26th, which will be starting at NDOT. I don't recommend anyone going out there on that day to see, because we are going to be on the expressway. But if any other day that you feel you'd like to go out there, feel free. We'll be going out there all week, and looks like the temperatures will be working with us. We've started mowing the grass, believe it or not, and spraying the riprap to ensure that we pass inspections. We're in negotiations right now with Lake County about extending Hart Ditch stabilization. They're trying to determine how much finances they have available. Everything else, Kennedy Avenue Bridge, we've submitted for funding for federal government, Griffith Levee Rehabilitation, which will be one of the larger projects that we undertake next year, is still being designed, and I've talked to Siavash, and he said that it will be ready for bid for 2022. Still working on the flood interviews for our project. Those invitations for people to be interviewed will be going out, so maybe some people in the public would like to participate, and if so,
we are
going to talk about 2008 and some of the memories and horror stories of that. Going through my report here, I think everything else we've covered in one form or fashion.
All right, back up here for questions for Mr. Repay about what's going on in the field. It's three pages. It looks like we're getting into construction season. Anyone? I'll start. I'll do one. Dan, having to do with this dire ditch clearing again, where's the line between maintenance that needs to be done by the municipalities or the county and where we come in, and how do we partner with them so they have some skin in the game for the deferred maintenance issues, so stuff like that doesn't happen again elsewhere in the watershed?
That's a good question, because we deal with it with Highland and Munster, specifically at Hart's Ditch, because technically it's a unregulated drain, so technically the municipalities are sort of responsible, but the reality is those types of projects are too large for them to undertake. They just don't have the manpower, the skill, the money to do stuff.
And it's
so
decades of neglect.
Right. So I partner with the county and tell them what we're doing, and we try to sort of dovetail with each other as to what they're going to do as far as maintenance and what we're going to do as maintenance, so that doesn't happen again. Because at the end of the day, as you know, they're not going to look for wanting to people point fingers. They're just going to say, well, why did it happen? And right. So if we clean
it'll be
it
our
out,
fault.
Well, we don't want it to be anyone's fault. So we're just going to clean it. And we have systematically goes through some of the major ditches. So in the event of Dyer Ditch, in this case, most places after 213th, it's open. So if you're familiar with Home Depot and the License Bureau over there in Sherrillville, that's all Dyer Ditch, and it's pretty open. No trees that can impede flow. But if you go in that area, 213th, or if you, say, take Plum Creek and take it from Main Street going south to 213th, there's a lot of trees in the way. So we have to pick and choose where the largest areas that could potentially flood or cause us disruption. And those are the areas that we try to pick. And we sort of get aggressive with them so that we don't have to keep on going back and doing them again.
So, I mean, we haven't talked about it, but one idea as we continue to evolve and continue to improve the process is maybe to start papering some of those things with an application so at least there's a record of when it was done, what was done, and be able to get them to sign on to at least something. Because if you start setting the precedent that you're doing the maintenance for everything, guess what? They're not going to do any maintenance.
Well, in that case, you're going to have, in certain areas of dire ditch, you're going to have a regular drain.
We're talking about all the ditches.
I understand. We can monitor them, and we'll put them together in our tracker. But as far as an application...
We don't have to call it an application.
Yeah.
We have to figure out some way to paper that deal. So when was the last time in there without the head injury guys sitting around going, oh, I think it was in 2018.
It was 5 or 6 years ago when we last went into dire ditch. And that was going back all the way to U.S. 30.
Right. So, Jody, it's almost to be a project, at least in review, to be able to help us with how those things happened in the past and come up with some way to at least paper it with whatever municipalities these locations are. So there's some record of when we went in there, what happened, that type of thing, so the next group of stewards aren't dealing with the stuff that we were handed. All right, anything else for Mr. Repay?
Yes, I have a question. Mr.
Yes, sir.
And can you tell us, when this construction season is coming up, that can you possibly give me or give us a report on any minority participation or for any of these contracts that are coming up in July or April or June for this month? I'd definitely like to see some minority participation or at least some kind of outlook that you reached out to minority companies to participate in all these construction projects that we have going. Thank you.
I can do that.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Repay? Once, twice, giddy up, moving right along. Next up is presentations. Dan, do the intro, please.
Yeah, sure. Let's see who's
up.
We've got C. Orbis here. There's your best presentation. What happened was in 2013 we had an initial watershed study. 2020 we have asked Ciorba, who has no affiliation with any other municipality, to come and update that since it's been 6 years or so, 7 years since we have, it's right up front. Since we've done some projects in the past, they're going to show you what projects have been completed, what projects have been taken off by those municipalities, and what future projects that they have deemed as more meaningful now since the first time we did our report.
Outstanding. Make sure the microphone's on for the young man, and have at it, sir. Introduce yourself. Let us know what's going on.
You got that microphone or you want it? Doesn't matter.
Yeah. I got through a whole bunch of stuff in 20 minutes. What are you going to do?
I'm going to try to beat you. Thanks for calling me a young man.
Here you go.
You're welcome.
You're gonna need this, otherwise we can't hear you.
Okay. And then is there a place I can plug this in to make my clicker work? Isn't it in the front?
Oh boy.
Oh, I don't know about that.
That's a great question.
Yeah.
Here, I'll just have to be your next person, maybe.
Or I can. I guess I can just touch the
screen. Yeah. We're learning. We're back in school for the first day.
Okay. Everybody hear me okay? Should I take this off? That'd be better?
Sure. The other said it was all right.
It'd be easier to hear me. So, thank you for having me here. I'm Tony Wolf. I'm Vice President for Water Resources with Sea Orba Group. And we were hired by the commission to provide an update to the watershed plan that was done in 2013. And so happy to be here and see you all in person. Just want to give you an idea of what our kind of purpose and scope for this was. We were not charged to kind of reinvent the wheel here or come up with a whole new watershed plan. It was more to take the 2013 watershed plan, figure out, you know, what the changes have been since then, account for projects that have been completed or maybe eliminated, and then also come up with some new projects that could be added to the list. 8 years have gone by, and for sure there's new needs out there, new problems that need to be solved. And so a bunch of new projects were added, and then also to come up with a way to kind of prioritize the projects for implementation. Because it's great to have a plan, but you also want to have a way to try and figure out, okay, how are we going to implement this plan as we go forward? So so we took a close look at the watershed plan that was done in 2013. We coordinated with all the participating agencies. So there were 15 municipalities, and then Lake County Highway Department, and also the commission yourself. And then once we completed all that coordination and kind of came up with all the data and processed the data, we just created this, what we're calling an addendum to the 2013 watershed plan. So the way we went about getting the information was to create a questionnaire that we sent out to all these participating agencies. And in that questionnaire, we basically just asked some basic questions, you know, like the projects that you had in the 2013 plan, which ones have been completed, which ones are underway, or which ones are you still planning to do, and then which ones have you kind of taken off the table. And then in addition to that, we asked them, do you have any additional projects, new projects, that weren't in the 2013 plan that you either have already implemented or you would like to implement in the near future? So the questionnaire was sent out to all 18 participating entities, and then we had follow-up meetings and phone calls and emails and various forms of communication with all the agencies to you know, collect as much data as we could and kind of get a handle on the challenges and the goals. So this is just a kind of a snapshot of the questionnaire that we created. We tried to make it as concise as possible to get the, you know, maximum number of responses that we could get. And so the three questions were just kind of what I said. You know, here's the projects that were in the plan from your community. Please give us an update. Have you done any other projects that improve the stormwater situation in your community? If so, please give us the information. And then, do you have any other projects that you would like to have included in the upcoming plan, in the updated plan? So, out of all the communities that we coordinated with, we got responses from almost everyone. 13 municipalities out of 15. So there were two municipalities that just didn't respond, and then the county and the commission all responded.
And who didn't respond?
It was Gary and Cedar Lake.
But Gary responds. We respond for Gary. That was always the assumption, that we respond for their issues.
10-4.
And you know, we did everything we could to get as much information and responses as we could. So we were kind of right at the line of annoying people, I think. So even with those two municipalities that didn't respond, out of the 92 projects that were in the 2013 plan, we were able to get updated information on 90 out of those 92 projects. So that's pretty great, actually.
Yeah, it is.
And out of those 92 projects, then what we found out is that 15 of them have been completed. 39 of them are still either ongoing or still planned to be done in the near future, and then 36 of them are kind of off the table now, not being considered for implementation for various reasons that I'll talk about a little bit in a few minutes. So just taking a look at the 15 projects out of 92 that have been completed, that's 16% of the total number of projects. And we kind of showed them here by community and the number of projects that were listed in the plan, the number that have been completed. And then where cost information was available, we showed that here too. So you can see that for the projects that had cost information available, it ended up about $7 million worth of projects that have been completed from the 2013 plan. But that leaves out, for instance, Hobart had four projects completed, but the cost information was not available. So then we started looking at, okay, of the projects that have not been completed yet, how can we go about prioritizing, you know, which projects that you might want to implement in the near future here as a commission. And so for the projects that were already in the 2013 plan, but have not been completed, but are still kind of in the plans for those communities, they still want to do them, either they've started them or they still want to do them. We broke it into, you know, which ones have they already completed the design engineering for, and which ones is the design engineering just kind of in progress. And so out of those 28 projects, we came up with actually about, you can see, this is in dollars actually, so the value of the projects, the construction cost estimate of the projects, about $50 million out of $56 million worth of projects already have engineering design complete for these projects from the original plan that they still want to do. So that's pretty good. That means there's a lot of projects out there that are kind of shovel ready or at least close. And so taking a little closer look at those projects that have the engineering design complete, we're calling those kind of the high priority for funding. So that's 14 projects. Seven of those are led by Lake County Highway Department. And out of those seven, four of them, they do not have funding in place for them. So those would be, you know, could be considered as high priority projects. You can see here that the biggest dollar amounts are coming from Lake County Highway and also Town of Merrillville, as far as projects that have design complete. And then for the projects that are, have engineering design in progress, and these are still projects from the 2013 plan, eight of those projects have started the engineering design, so kind of that second level priority maybe of funding. Town of Dyer and Lake County and Hobart are kind of in that category as far as they've got the design underway, but they've got a little way to go yet before the projects are ready to go. Okay, so then we started taking a look at that. That kind of summarizes the projects that were already in the 2013 plan that were either completed or still are underway or still to be done. Then we took a look at the list of new projects that the different agencies submitted to be included in the updated plan. So we came up with, out of those, a total of 53 new projects that were added to this updated plan with a total cost estimate of around $150 million for those projects. 10 of those have already been completed, and then 43 of them are you know, yet to be done. So again, with the prioritization for these new projects, we want to look at, you know, where are these projects at as far as the design process. And so here you can see that in this case, because these are new projects being added to the plan, the majority of them, engineering hasn't even started yet. But they're kind of on their wish list of projects that they'd like to do. So that's kind of this, you know, the majority portion there. But then about a quarter of them have engineering in progress, and then another quarter of them have engineering design complete, so they're ready to go. So 11 projects have the engineering design complete of those new projects that are listed. You know, Crown Point, I guess, has a project that they were waiting for a funding decision from the commission. And Town of Winfield has a project where they've already secured an 80-20 match from the commission, and then Hobart and Lake County had some projects, but we're not sure what the funding situation is there. But you can kind of see over here, about half of these projects, as far as dollar value, are in the town of Hobart. Okay, and then here's new projects that are design in progress. So there's nine of those, and five of them are in Merrillville. So Merrillville has a big part of this pie here, as far as they've got the design going on some new projects, and they've just got a little ways to go before they would be ready for implementation. And then finally, the last category is the new projects where engineering design has not started yet. There's 21 of those. So they're kind of what we're calling a low funding priority, just because there's a ways to go yet before you could actually implement them. But you know, they can still be evaluated based on their merit as the commission sees fit. You can see that the majority of those are Crown Point projects, with also Dyer and Hobart showing some projects of significant cost in there. Oops. Okay, and then just the last piece we want to talk about was why were there so many projects, I guess, that kind of were in the 2013 plan, but now are off the table, not being considered for implementation anymore. There were 36 of those, which is 39% of the total number of projects from that 2013 plan. It's kind of a variety of reasons. It depends on the project and the location and the community. So I don't want to go through every single project, but I just wanted to give you a flavor. So like, for instance, in the town of Dyer, they had six projects in the 2013 plan. Three of them they've kind of taken off the table because either they weren't viable with the Forest Preserve District, or they kind of shifted their priorities over to another project, in this case, the Park Ditch two-stage channel. They felt was a higher priority than the ones they took off. Town of Highland, as an example, had three projects. Two of those they took off the list. You know, because either the location was bad or they just decided it wasn't their jurisdiction. A couple more. City of Hobart, they had 19 projects in the original plan, and six of them are off the table now. Just one example is that there was a regional detention basin that was originally in the plan that they kind of decided was not really going to provide the benefit that they were hoping it would. St. John, some projects that they decided were not under their authority or just kind of more like maintenance projects. So you get the idea, you know, without going through each one of these, why some of these projects were taken off the list. Some of them weren't able to get as much information about. The projects listed under the commission, actually, there were 13 of them in the 2013 plan, and they've kind of been swapped out for 12 projects in the updated plan. So still a lot of good projects there. So if I haven't gone too long here, this is just to kind of wrap it up. You know, we reached out to all the participating agencies, got responses back from the vast majority of them. Got updates on almost every project that was in the 2013 plan. Came up with information on a bunch of new projects too that can be added to your plan as kind of you know, like wish list projects or ways to continue to improve the watershed here. I thought about adding another. Oh yeah, so 53 new projects, which was on a previous slide. I thought about adding a final slide here that just kind of said, like, next steps, ? But that was kind of the end of our scope, which was just to do this update of the Watershed Master Plan. But I feel like an important thing to think about now is how to go about continuing to implement the plan, how to go about prioritizing the projects that have been identified. And so that's something to be discussed.
That's a great segue. I have a question. I'm sorry.
All right, hold on a second. Thank you, Mr. Wolf. That was well done. And then just for the public and for the audience, the premise of the comprehensive plan was the watershed. Obviously, the Little Cal, well, not obviously, the Little Cal is responsible for the Federal Control Project, which is what we know as the Little Cal River. So everything up and down the river in and of itself is the responsibility, you know, of the office of Mr. Repay. Everything within the watershed, which is all the locations within the county that runoff feeds into the Little Cal, is a part of the watershed. So what we did in 2013 before we had any money was to go out and ask all of those communities to prioritize their individual stormwater projects and to be able to prioritize them in such a way that we can try to help it in a holistic way to accomplish those goals. This report was to update that 2013 to bring it more up into you know, today's standards, and you did a good job. Thank you for that. Mr. Broadnecks.
Yeah, so thank you. Regarding next steps, I was just looking at you know, the scope and what we paid you. You're right, we didn't pay you to reinvent the wheel, but you know, should we require additional assistance? I was wondering if CORBA did any sort of back-of-the-napkin analysis or additional analysis than what was presented today or in the report on maybe a different way to prioritize the projects. I'm sure when you kicked this off, Mr. Repay informed you that really it was exactly that. It was a wish list. We had, as the chairman just said, no money. and really no input, not much input anyway, on the projects that were there. Obviously, with 40% of them coming off the table, maybe the wish list wasn't that great. You know, now that we have not just funds, but, you know, a bigger mandate.
And some history.
And some history, we actually do want to be a little bit more proactive in terms of maybe partnering and how we partner with the communities in terms of which projects we think are more important. So I guess all that to say, you know, is there, I mean, the report sounds administrative to me. Is there analysis, you know, from an engineering perspective on, you know, maybe a different way to prioritize the projects?
Yeah, I mean, another way that you could look at them and no, we haven't done a lot of I guess technical analysis of these projects. We didn't have enough information really
right.
to do
or
that.
Do you have an opinion on?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. But I think a way to do it would be or one way I guess one factor. There's a lot of factors you know that could go into that prioritization process. But one is going to be you know how many residents are going to benefit from a given project, or what's the level of benefit. You can look at you know benefit versus cost as far as dollars go.
Right.
But you can also look at just kind of quality of life benefits. I mean, there's a lot of different ways that you can kind of go about prioritizing projects, and that's definitely something that we could do. This was just kind of the, I guess, quickest way to see which projects could we implement.
Yeah, based on engineering progress.
Yeah, right.
I mean, that's significant, I mean, to some degree, right? If a municipality paid for engineering, it must be important to them still. So that's not insignificant, let's put it that way. But, yeah, we certainly want to make sure that there's some other factors associated with what's in the list going forward. So while this is an update to the old plan, ultimately I think we kind of need a new plan. So...
Mr. Chairman, I had a question for
you. Yes, sir.
So for the presentation, we saw the, I guess, the watershed for the plan was done in 2013. Have you or have your consultants, your consulting firm, looked at other communities in the past where you're projecting forward for future development that can incorporate, I guess, permeable services that are being planned and incorporate this into the comprehensive plan? Therefore, kind of giving us an idea of how much more water we're going to be shedding into the Little Calumet River as it ultimately comes out, and the tributaries that contribute to those flows of water. Is there a consideration for doing that in the future, or have you done that in the past for other municipalities?
Yeah, that's a part of when you're kind of looking forward.
I mean, I found it interesting that St. John and Sherville didn't have any projects planned in 2013, which at the time probably didn't come into play, but now as future developments, as we read, going forward are going to be developed.
There's a few things you want to look at when you're kind of looking down the road at trying to prioritize different projects or benefits. So one is expected land use changes, right? So if you're going to be, like you say, if you're going to be increasing impervious surface, creating more runoff, you got to account for that in your analysis. But also, just you know, the rainfall data has changed, you know, so much over the years, and so we want to make sure that we're using the latest and greatest
models,
and not using rainfall data that was used, you know, 20, 30 years ago for designing projects.
So, sure.
Gentlemen?
Mr. Chair, I think I was surprised to see how many projects came off Mr. Wolf's list based on things like they didn't feel like the project was warranted as a result of, it wasn't a design and engineering issue. I would probably like to see, to Anthony's point, to Commissioner Brodnack's point, I would probably like to see something that shows some indication as to if the data can be a little more granular. Something that sort of breaks it out by, not limited to design and engineering, but I think we got enough history. I think we have enough history based on the baseline report that was done in 2013 follow-up one here, to probably say so many of these are inspection related. And I'm just talking off the top of my head. So many were inspection related. So many were design related. So many were engineering related. So many were, I don't want to say procedural, but maybe if there were some procedures.
Well, I can use Hobart as an example where Hobart, because what we did at the railroad, took two of their projects off the
overcome by events.
Off
the so to speak, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Became obsolete.
If there's a more granular breakdown that can come out of this, I think, you know, it would be beneficial for the next group of commissioners or people who are going to manage the watershed in the future in terms of the breakdown of the reasons that money was spent or that things did not need to be implemented.
Yeah, I mean, Commissioner Whitaker, I think that does go back to my point is that I don't know if that was in their scope necessarily. But, you know, I was looking at what we paid them. Not a lot, really, to do what they did, especially, you know, constant phone calling, bugging people. I'm sure that took a lot of time. But that's where we need to go, I think, is, right?
Yeah.
Is understanding not just what came off, but what's new.
Yeah.
What's,
you want to have some traceability, as much traceability as you possibly can, so that in the event that things do arise in the future, and he said, you know, you made a good point about the waterfall levels, past, current, and future. Hopefully that gives us some indication, or whoever else is going to succeed us in the future, what may need to be looked forward to if in the event this does occur. Like may have been delayed, or it may not have been required now based on this, but.
Everybody keeps talking about the future commissioners. Are we all quitting?
Yeah, if we don't get a raise. Mr. Wyszlinski.
Yeah, I mean, you guys had the first pass in 2013, and now here's the second bite of the apple. And you have a chance to look at all this stuff. And I start looking going forward, maybe as a template or some sort of checklist for each of the partnering communities where they can actually, like you suggested, what's the return on investment here? And is the return on investment viable for what we're trying to do here, alleviate the flooding, help communities, get people out of the floodplain, things of that nature, and just so they can go through and say, you know, they're spitballing, they're throwing stuff on the wall and saying, this is a great project. We think it's a great project. Well, really, is it a great project? Here's a checklist. And then when you go down the checklist, well, that really doesn't meet the criteria. Mm-hmm. So maybe we look a little bit down the road for you guys and we can talk about this. Is what's the next step to build on what you guys just did and going forward to help the people that come here because, you know, they're always coming to looking for money and is it really a viable project?
Yeah, if they're looking for money, it might be a great project for them, but if it may not be super beneficial for us, but it doesn't hurt us, right? And so that might help us make a funding decision on these applications. Maybe they only get 20% instead of.
Okay, you guys can have your discussion offline. Is there any other questions for Mr. Wolf?
He's home.
If they're not. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank you very much.
All right, Mr. Repay, let's go.
You got a date or something?
Talk about the next 13 projects. So, of the 53 projects that are still in some stage, according to this report, and $53 million. I mean, we're looking at close to 1.3 million in ongoing projects that are still out in the watershed. So, not bad for a group that had no money a couple years ago. Let's go.
Nat Miller is here from Autobahn Chicago. He will do his presentation on our agreement that we put together back in 2019, February of 2019. So I think, I don't know if you're going to be the only one doing it, Nat?
So as Mr. Miller sets up, what we had done a couple of years ago was went into a contract agreement with Audubon and some of their partners to look at some of the areas along the Little Cal proper and try to see if we can incorporate some of the things that they're attuned at doing as a part of our projects to kind of fold into that recreational educational component of what this project was originally designed for back in the 80s when people lost their direction and we had September 2008 come in. So as we're fixing that and continue to work on the number one priority, which is flood control, while we do all these millions of dollars of projects, let's fold in some of these aspects as it relates to not only recreation, but also environmentals. How's that for leading, Mr. Miller? It's nice to meet you.
That was beautiful.
All right.
Thank you. Thanks for having us here again. Appreciate it, Commission. I'm joined by Gary Sullivan, who's the senior ecologist at the Wetlands Initiative. Again, I'm Nat Miller. I'm the director of conservation for Audubon Great Lakes, which is a regional field office covering five states for National Audubon Society. I think I'll be able to address many of the questions you all had on our claim, but feel free to interrupt at the right moment for that. We'll have time for questions at the end, of course, as well. So I'll start with the bottom line on what we've accomplished. I think we've really tackled a lot since we last spoke to you. We were here in October when we reported, and I think some of our reporting has not maybe kept up with our billing, and I think that was just a misunderstanding of how often we should be billing. But over since this project started really getting on the ground in January of 2019, we had a plan for a two-year agreement through the end of 2020 with you all, which we're asking for an extension of now. We've improved habitat across 300 acres within the river, contracted with two ecological restoration contractors, Applied Ecological Services and V3, I think you're familiar with both of those, as well as established a crew with Lake County Parks that has two current crew members, now currently hiring a third. Those crew members have worked across 50 acres. Delayed in hiring, COVID really set us back with that as there was a hiring freeze. We see that crew as really being able to sustain these investments in the long term, building Lake County Parks' capacity to manage the restoration done in a bigger way. We've executed a total of $631,000 on this project, and with the current claim in to you all for $150,000, that would be $188,000 billed to the commission. The majority of the rest of that has come from the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation. It was also on a two-year, same timeline. We've also asked for an extension and had it approved through June to spend those funds. And we've had partner contributions as well as in-kind contributions from the U.S. Army Corps, which helped us with some of the planning. We engaged 14 organizations and 480 individuals in the conservation action planning and some of our engagement work, especially in the city of Gary. That's led to a conservation action plan. You have a fact sheet in our report and bill, but there's a 40-page document that supports that. It has a plethora of organizations that are supporting our strategies here on the river. We've also worked with the Corps, who's provided their in-kind public assistance to states engineering to ensure that our plans do not jeopardize any of the flood retention, in fact, will retain optimal conditions while we can still manage water in a way that provides optimal conditions for wildlife, especially birds like this black tern you see here. It looks really good with your new logo. Congrats on that, by the way. We appreciate the bird being there. Black tern is a species that hasn't nested in Calumet in 20 years, over 20 years. One of the birds that depends on high-quality wetlands, ones that we hope will come back. Up here. Here's a before and after at Martin Luther King Drive South, if you're familiar with that area. This is looking east off of Georgia, and that's 2017 standing down there. And then, believe it or not, that is this morning with snow on the ground. Didn't expect that to have that in the photo. So you can see the amount of Phragmites that has been removed from the site. This has gone several different ways. These are complicated sites to do restoration, as you all know. But we've used helicopter, we've used crews on the ground, we've used marsh masters in a new way with Applied Ecological Services. So
Mr. Miller, for those that don't know what a Phragmites is, would you point those out, please?
Yeah, you can always notice them because they keep that feathery that feathery top all the way through winter.
So when you drive around the region, especially along the highways, and you see what looks like what we grew up as cattails, those aren't cattails. Those are Phragmites, and they're invasive species. Is that correct?
That's correct. They become so dense that the habitat is no longer habitat. It's inhabitable. There's another photo from the south end of Martin Luther King Drive from 2018 before we started. 2019, this is just to show you what the work looks like on the ground. We can't use helicopter over top of power lines, so there's somebody on a ladder who's got a backpack sprayer spraying Phragmites. And then again, this is the photo from this morning. It's all gone, and there's a lot more dying in the background.
So is there any difference between the time that you take a picture in 18 that's in July and then in mid-April in 2021 as it relates to just growth season?
Yeah, and after the Phragmites are dead, they're still there as well unless you burn them or mow them. So those stands will stay through the winter, and then you'll see new green sprouts come up. So here you can see actual removal. On the right side of the photo, on the left side, you can see dead stands that eventually will rot, but that could take years. So oftentimes we try and get a fire out there. We're trying to get a fire out there right now. Martin Luther King Drive, it's one of the most difficult places in probably the Midwest to burn because you got three gas pipes going underground, you got high power lines, and you got community and two massive freeways. So we have to have an easterly wind. Just the right conditions. And actually today we had east wind, but there's too much precipitation on the ground to burn, so.
Is that the only way to remove them, or can you?
You can mow them. Mow them down is a great alternative, or now there's folks who are harvesting them. Loyola's harvesting, actually. They have like a combine out there that can only go in shallow water. It can't go in deeper areas, but B3, the contractor, is actually considering purchasing one of those harvesters.
And then is it reused in some other?
They're trying to study to see if it's viable to use it as biofuel, economically viable. You can use it as biofuel, but unless somebody's paying, subsidizing it, it's not viable yet. Highland Heron Rookery, really popular site with the community. Great progress there. You can see, Commissioner, the stages of live Phragmites. You can tell it's dead there because of the yellowing, and now our crews have removed it. At least on the edges. We haven't burned them inside, but this is all dead Phragmites as well. That'll slowly go away. Any idea what those lines are? This is an aerial of Highland Heron Rookery.
Probably where you went.
Mowers.
It's a Marshmaster amphibious vehicle that kills Phragmites. There's only a couple contractors have that, including Applied Ecological Service. Good way to tell you that they've done all the work, because there's lines everywhere on all the Phragmites.
Yeah. This would have been great after it got done, Mr. Miller.
Yes.
So once these Phragmites kind of create their own soil and fill in the marsh area, is that a true statement?
Yeah, absolutely. They retain sediment, so they'll continue to build on their base, and they're rhizomatous, so they spread incredibly long distances through their root systems. And
once they're killed and they die off, how will that matter decay, and then it'll become back to marshland?
Yep. It usually takes two or three chemical treatments to get the Phragmites to really go. So it's usually... We're always telling funders we're on two-year grant cycles. It's a 4 or 5 year process.
So, is it possible? I mean, just you look at farmers and they go and they harvest the wheat with their combine. Hooking some implement to an amphibious vehicle and just like you're harvesting hay and then take it off site and burn it.
Yes, that's what Loyola has. It can only go in about 2 feet of water. Okay. Any deeper than that, it doesn't work. But they'd be an interesting partner to consider in some of these areas. We've definitely talked to them. Most of your areas are deeper marsh, but certainly in the other areas.
What's one of the shallower areas where that might apply?
Usually on the edges, like you can see here on Island, it's a shallow gradient. So, it's into the kind of what we call wet meadow. Depending on how high water is, it can be, half of the site.
You got it on the other side of the 912.
highway along there, and that stuff is 6, 8, 10 feet high.
Yeah. It's everywhere. It's really rampant in this region.
So as part of that conversation, Mr. Miller, was that as this was going on, and if we were engaged from the standpoint of the timing of what these types of things, we would probably look to expand some of those contracts to some of those other areas. So instead of stopping where the line is as far as the property line, and right across the ditch is the highway, and there's a bunch of phragmites that are growing there, why would we leave them?
Right.
So therein lies the thought process of at least having some engagement to the point, if not through us, we can work on some of the other partners, at least within the community, to try to see if we can't get some economies of scale.
Yeah, I recognize that, Chair, and I appreciate it. I'm responsible for our conservation work across 5 states, and I'm now going to be project managing this project just because we recognize the need to communicate much more closely with you all as on steps along the way. So be very excited to coordinate something like that. This is what we'd like you to think about as your crew. It's actually Lake County Parks, new people who are dedicated to your areas. Emily and Adriana, they are amazing and getting great work done in the field. This is their handiwork here, cleaning up. That might be Lake Etta. And Lake County Parks is currently hiring a third staff member. We'd really love to see the future commission investments focused on a long-term strategy of maintaining these restorations. It's usually easier for us to find outside funding to get the big contractual work done, but investing in the maintenance or the management is something most funders don't like to do. If you guys can build a relationship with Lake County Parks to maintain these investments, it could be really mutually beneficial. Just got a couple more. I think you heard some of our community engagement work. Again, this was probably some of the worst time to start a project. We're trying to engage groups of people, so we're a little slow, but some of the salaries you see us billing is for an engagement staff, Wild Indigo staff named Jen Johnson, who works out of Gary. This is a Marshalltown Block Club, who we brought out to Hatcher Park, into the Marshalltown. We called the Colorado Track, we're now calling the Marshalltown Marsh, to think about new natural areas and ways that people can engage in them. These two bullets are the way we talk about the commission. I'm presenting it to you as the way we have a vision of how the commission should be viewed as a community asset. Certainly since the 80s, working to protect people from flooding events, but now in partnership with us and fellow conservation organizations, taking a bold step to restore and revitalize the river and its wetlands for the benefit of birds and to create a new natural spaces for the people of Northwest Indiana. We also would like to work much more closely with you on communicating that. How do we get that out to the public? How do we get your logos on our materials going out and have great conversations about where we go next? Try and go quick here because Gary's got a little bit of the detail on some of the next steps for water control, which we really want to run by you. Here's some upcoming events, though, just to give you a taste of the engagement work. Green Gary Week. So we led bird walks. We did a webinar today, and we will hope to have some levee walks coming up in June or July. Those will be great opportunities to get you out and get folks that you guys know out. So we'll keep communication through Dan on when those calendar of events update, and hopefully you can participate. There's just a flyer for the... Look how good your logo looks on our flyers with that bird, I'm telling you. I know Derek Nimitz would appreciate this. He got a full briefing on a new tool that is related to this, but a separate project Audubon's doing that's looking at the data of these state-threatened species. This is a focus of a lot of conservation effort because the marsh birds we're talking about have faced rapid decline, some of them up to 80% in the last 50 years. They're going to be gone soon. About 3 of those species are extirpated from this region. They're no longer breeding here. We can bring them back, though. This is a data visualizer. It's open to the public. Those are some of the monitoring sites we've done on the little cow since 2017. And you can see your occupancy, so the kind of the average that these birds will be here is about 0.39. The average in Calumet at the sites that we monitor, which are all the top priority sites, is 0.36. So you guys are above average already, even with deteriorating conditions. And what I really like to see is the early signs of recovery here. You can see the peach color is 2020. And most of those species in 2019 and 2020 did better than they did the two previous years. We want to see that. Really, you need about 5 or 6 years of trend data to be able to really understand what's happening.
They weren't traveling either, huh? COVID.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to turn it over to Gary Sullivan to talk about where we are with the planning, which is another big aspect of this work. And again, why you see some salaries is we're working with conservation organizations and the Army Corps to understand how we can design future restoration working with you all.
Hi, thanks for having us. Essentially...
I'm sorry, Gary, can you say your name and what your group is again? Because everybody can't remember that far back.
Yeah, my name is Gary Sullivan, and I am an ecologist with the Wetlands Initiative, and we're one of the organizations partnering with Audubon and TNC and Lake County Parks on this project to hopefully to be able to restore some wetland habitat, heavy marsh habitat, some places in the within the floodplain along the river channel. And one of the goals that we've had is essentially to look for, you know, it's almost like 2,000 acres in the area we're looking at from Highland all the way up to Route 65, and looking at specific areas where we could restore, increase habitat, while at the same time having no negative impact in terms of flood storage. So we're talking about like an ecological lift without any cost to, you know, to the basin in terms of flood storage capacity. So heavy marsh development for wildlife habitat is probably one of the things that is most exciting to us. We get an opportunity to restore habitat for not just for nesting birds, but for mammals, reptiles, and amphibians. And let's see how we move forward here. We did this in developed this in terms of like two phases, and we're really kind of like at the end of the first phase here, which is the phase in which some of your funds are going to are being contributed towards. We're looking at a number of different areas. Highland, or I'm sorry, Heron Rookery is one of them. The Grant Street Wetlands is another area which we're working. Martin Luther King South and Martin Luther King North, and the Marshalltown Marsh area. So what we initially did, we went in and essentially evaluated these wetlands for the potential for restoration. Could we actually put resources into them, lift them up, and change them into something that provides good wildlife habitat? And so just in terms of the number of steps we were taking, we were working at the regional hydrology and on a per site, a water level assessment to see what could be done. We wanted to look at the topography in the site and assess the bathymetry within these sites, which is really critical in determining, like, well, can you establish habitat there? Can you establish marshes there? You got to kind of figure out what it looked like, how the water worked in those sites. And then assess the vegetation, and essentially most of these places, that's assessing invasive species because there's very little native habitat left there. We also, as Nat was saying, we're working with Lake County Parks to train crews to become the basis for long-term management of these areas here. So there's no point in us doing this work unless there's going to be some system in place to manage the sites, and that's where Lake County Parks comes in. And then this last one is really the most important part in terms of our ability to be successful, is to look to see, is there a way to manage water levels within these different sites that we're looking at? And so in the first phases, we really focused on Heron Rookery and Martin Luther King South. And the idea there is that could we install a water control structure, essentially like a stop log type of structure where you could raise and lower water levels in a way that we could, say, during a drought season, maintain water levels for habitat, or if you need to lower water levels to do work in there, to work on Phragmites, like maybe you want to do a burn, you got to get the water out of there, that kind of thing, but then you could raise it back up. And in some cases, you could raise it up high enough that you could start flooding out Phragmites and use water level management as a tool to get rid of Phragmites and where it's at an elevation where it would be susceptible to that. So we are coming towards the end of that right now, and we have plans in place. We worked with the Corps of Engineers just to make sure that, you know, it was a critical, you know, for us and for them that whatever we were planning wasn't going to have any impact on flood storage capacity, and you know that would have been, you know, a big red flag. So we've done that, and we have the plans in place. And we're moving into phase two, and I guess I should say that where we're going to be installing, hopefully installing this summer, late this summer, the water control structures. And then start working on the Phragmites, or continue the work in the Phragmites using three different methods here: the chemical application, prescribed burning, and flooding. Flooding being a way to flood them out, which will be facilitated by the water control structures. And then wetland plant community development. We're going to be starting this summer installing plants in areas where it's appropriate to do so. It's admittedly, it's going to be a smaller area this first year because it's going to take a couple of years to get rid of that Phragmites. But once as the Phragmites begins to disappear and we get to pull that back, then we begin to expand the native plant introductions. Then lastly, we're going to be moving into the phase three planning for additional areas besides just Heron Rookery and MLK South. So these are just examples of two different types of stop block structures here. The top one essentially is a concrete one. The bottom one is a sheet pile. They're really very simple, basic structures. They're not made to hold a higher level of water, but they are made to, like you can see the water level behind this concrete one at the top. They're made to like bring it up maybe a couple of feet, and you have the ability by taking these logs that fit in these slots, you take them out and you drop the water level down, you put it back in, you can bring it all the way up to the top. So this is just kind of some bullet points of what they do, and I think essentially, you know, you can manipulate water level from the side to achieve whatever your goals are, you know, which is basically, you know, how much area you can inundate, how deep do you want the water to be, and how to maintain your ecological restoration goal. So, you know, again, that's like being able to maintain water during drought periods. And I'll show you an example of that. Like this past summer, Martin Luther King South, that area there was completely dried out. It normally, or I shouldn't say normally, it can potentially hold up to like 3 feet of water. It has a pool of around 60 acres in size that is great bird habitat, nesting birds, and but this summer it wasn't really much good for anything that way. And then,
Than there wasn't any water?
Why it wasn't good habitat for birds?
If it usually had 3 feet of water and it didn't this year, what caused that occurrence?
The usual is a little bit kind of some years yes and some years no. The river goes up and down quite a bit, and when the river goes up high enough, it floods that site, and then the river goes down, and it slowly drains out. So it's kind of like going up and down, up and down. That's also a reason that you can't develop a stable plant community, a stable marsh community, and because it is draining out. There has been a period of time when beavers have dammed it off, and then it's maintained it at higher levels for longer periods of time. And while the beaver dams are in place, you get this nice marsh habitat developing, the plants that support breeding marsh birds. And
so I guess I'm the responsibility person that puts it dry, because there's one culvert that runs underneath the transmission lines that we take out. So now I feel bad.
Well, that's where the water drains, so that's the issue.
Well, it still drains. It's just that it goes over.
Now, with a beaver dam in it, it doesn't.
Well, it'll go over the top, but anyway.
I feel bad now.
The key thing again here is that, you know, there is virtually no maintenance to these things, and even if they were ignored and no one ever did anything with them, it's not going to have any impact on flood control or flood water storage. And this is just sort of a diagram. I don't want to spend too much time on it. It's basically the invert's going to be 2 foot lower than the top of the structure. The width of the opening is only about 3 feet. So it's a very small opening at this structure, and it's only going to be able to raise the water levels 2 feet higher than the invert. So in MLK South, this is the northwest corner. This is where the structure would be, and this is really just a generic diagram of what it would look like. It could be made, again, out of concrete or sheet piling, 3 feet by 2 feet, and it'd be right there at the opening right there.
That's where typically the beavers block it up.
Right. And then as far as doing the management of something like that, who would be responsible for making the determination when that would be put in and when it's not going to be put in, and who's doing the integrity of the structure?
That's a great question. And right now, we're working on developing it being a Lake County Parks responsibility to do that. But the key thing is that it's normally going to be the stop logs are going to be in. The only time you take the stop logs out is if you need to drain it for some sort of management purposes. And Lake County Parks, if they are in charge of managing the plant community, they'd be the ones that decide, is it, you know, do we need to lower the water level so we can get in there and do some sort of work? Or do we need to, you know, keep them up so that we can flood some flood plants out?
Well, I'm just thinking of the flood control aspect of this. If you have a big rain event, we get 3 inches of rain, obviously that that pond's going to fill up. They're going to want to, you know, drain it. Well, we're going to have capacity issues and where they want to drain that water. So those are the kinds of scenarios to work through.
Well, I think that one of the, when we design this, 3 inches of rain, or if the river goes up, you know, like 11 feet, then there's, you know, there's like 8 feet of water over the top of that thing. It's just going to drain out over the top of that structure. And the structure is actually so low that it's not going to impact any kind of, you know, flood storage capacity. It's just going to be holding back a relatively shallow amount of water across this pool. This is 2018 when the Beaver Dam was in place right here. And you can see this is a normally, this pool's there all the time. It's kind of fixed. Whoa. But this is what the footprint of the water was, you know, back when it was full. This was last year. You see there's no water in there at all. So that's when the dam was taken out. What we want to do is, in a sense, is kind of create a situation that's not quite as full as this, but similar to this. And this, all this water here would become the basis for that marsh that supports the wildlife. Well, this would be the footprint of the water if it was maintained at its highest level. And we're not suggesting that it is maintained at its highest level. And again, this is a level of water that the Corps has already signed off on. They're not concerned about being a problem if it was maintained like that. I think we would be maintaining it much lower than this. This is essentially the highest level it could be. And anybody have a question before I go on to Heron Rookery?
No.
Okay. So it's essentially the same kind of thing, except the Heron Rookery, this is the channel, the outlet channel that dumps it into the river at the northeast corner of that site. And it would be going right here, the same exact kind of a structure. You remember 2008, it sounds like, from today's discussion, when water levels were high. This is a lot of water got trapped in here during the high water. And so this whole thing was flooded. This is cattails and phragmites that was flooded. And so the vegetation's there, but this water is up underneath it. So this is like really, really high there. And this is kind of a weird site because if you get a big rain event, that thing fills up the water. You can put 3 feet of water in there in a very short period of time. It drains out relatively quickly, but that's really dynamic with water levels moving up and down. This is the same picture that Matt showed you where in 2020 we had a very dry summer. They were able to get out and get a machine, move through that whole area there. So most of this stuff was dewatered. This is an old oxbow, so that stays a little bit deeper all the time. And again, this is where the outlet structure would be. Water would drain through here and out into here.
When you folks were out there, was that structure clogged or was it operating as designed, the outflow in the northeast corner?
It's operating as designed. So when the water levels are really low, the bottom of the channel is actually even a little bit lower than the water levels out here. So it's a downslope getting out to the outlet to the river. So if we were able to put in, I didn't expect that.
the problem is it's a duck bill and there's not enough water pressure to push it
out. It's a duck bill.
Which is shoots it out to there.
Yeah. So
at a point, there's no force to make
right.
it go.
There will never be any force really coming out of there.
Well, unless it's filled up like in 2008.
Yeah, if water can come
in. Is that
in.
Our structure? I'm sorry. Is that our structure to take care of?
Yep.
And that was a core design with that duck bill. Has any of those duck bills ever worked? Other than the ones that have the beer can opening them up?
Well, they work, but they just require a whole lot of pressure to move the water out.
You put about 5 foot of water behind it, and it'll open up. And then it'll stay open until it gets down, then it closes up again. But this is an inlet for, you know, like a flood control inlet over here. So, like in 2008, the river's coming this way, and it just went right over the top. But that's a, you know, that's probably once in 100 years.
It's actually designed at the 100-year flood elevation to flood over there as a sheet pile wall over there in that northwest corner.
Yeah.
Why was Griffin Golf Course dry?
In when? Now?
In that picture.
In 2008.
It didn't. There's a pipe that runs right where his structure or the design of that structure is that runs underneath that flows back to the golf course. The golf course had water on it, but it just came out on the outside of it. I don't think it's a 2008 picture of the golf course because we have video that shows it was wet.
It could have been 2008 in April.
After the event.
So in some sense, the point is to show you kind of like a high water level, low water level. This is kind of what it would look like when the lowest water, you'd still always have a lot of water out here. No matter what we do with it. And again, this is the high water level, if we plugged it up, this is what the light blue is where everything would be flooded. This is the area where you could be flooding out Phragmites by just manipulating water levels. We wouldn't want to keep it up this high. We want to be somewhere in between those two. But that's like a management action where we could get it up this high and flood out most of these areas in here. So that's it for the water level control structures that we're trying to do. In terms of future planning, this is MLK North, the rail line, and what we want to do there is reconfigure the channel. This is a much bigger project in a sense. Reconfigure the channel to create more habitat within the stream, within the floodplain. It's a different type of project in the sense that it's working within the floodplain. These other ones are off the floodplain. These are like manipulating water to create marshes away from the floodplain. This is directly right in the channel. And this is just one of the types of designs. This is just a conceptual design that we're looking at possibly doing where you, these are old meanders that were used to flow before they cut it, reestablishing flow into there and with some minor excavation, putting in large woody debris, rock structures to channelize water one way or another. And so that's really essentially a way to create more habitat within this area here. And then Marshalltown, this is the same kind of thing. This was the past summer when everything was really dry. You've got some old channels that are still up here. The footprint of this was, since this was an ag, they filled all this in. In fact, Deep River used to go and come down and move up in here. This whole thing was filled in for ag many, many years ago. And so this is just another conceptual plan that we're developing to restore a broad marsh floodplain here. This is about 300 acres in size where we restore flow to these old channels, digging new channels, re-channelization essentially, and then restoring a broad marsh through here. So it's not a deep incised channel with water flowing in a straight line. It would be almost like a lake where it would be relatively shallow. There'd be a lot of marsh vegetation growing on it. And the main channel would be kind of a sinusoidal channel moving through there. So same kind of things. Large woody debris would be installed in the channel, rock structures, and some relatively minor, maybe not so minor, in some cases, depending on how you want to do it. This is the kind of place where you can put islands out there. You know, there's vast potential for a community kind of resource in terms of like places to go fishing and things like that. Around the whole thing, we have potential plans to connect up all these walking and biking trails around here so that you can go all the way, like from Lake Etta Park, all the way over to the other side of I-65. So I don't know if you have anybody any questions about that. That's kind of a, at this point, it's a conceptual plan. Yep.
You have some type of flood control structure there at the far, at I-65, on your picture there to the far right. Yes.
No, there will be no attempt to do anything to hold water back. What we will be doing is, by reestablishing flow in those channels, you're actually going to be increasing flood storage capacity because you're lengthening the channel. You're taking a straight channel and then spreading it out over a broader area. And so it's not going to have any kind of negative capacity in this area here.
And Dan, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't this where we end up with a problem with backflow from Deep River?
Yeah, that's
back upstream.
That's how the core is designed, right where he was pointing, where his blue and red meet is right where the bridge covers, where we have the USGS gauge, and then just as you go southeast is the culvert that runs underneath I-65. So that's why there's such a wide area. Marshalltown is allowed to expand because it's naturally flooding. That's WLTH's tower. That's the whole area up north on the top right of his, or top left of his red box, is some of the area that we bought flowage easement.
Deep River doesn't push back into that
area? It can, because as it goes underneath I-65, it slowly goes just past Colorado into that area that is the confluence. So there's two areas where it slows down. One, just to the east of 65, and then in that area, it's designed to back up.
I understand that.
In 2008, it did. You had water coming in and going this way. So, and it does spread out in here, and obviously, that was a hell of a flood.
I just want to make sure you guys were aware of that.
Yeah. And then, and again, nothing that we're talking about here is going to reduce flood storage capacity. It may be moving some material around and lengthening the channel itself, but that's it. It's kind of like a zero-sum game in terms of water capacity on the inside.
It's almost like acknowledging what it already wants to do anyway.
Well, it's kind of trying to get it to go
back
to the way it used to be.
Restoring it.
Yeah. From an ecologist perspective, which I'm a wetlands ecologist, the beauty of something like this is that it's changing something that really has virtually or very little ecological value to something that would have a great deal of ecological value in terms of like bird habitat, mammal, you know, habitat, whether it's muskrats, beavers, whatever it is, snakes, turtles, but also has habitat value in terms of humans is for recreational purposes, and whether it's fishing, birding, or just a place for people to go and enjoy nature. This would be a very different kind of place if we were able to pull this off. And that is it. This is just a list of the partners that are involved in this. The people are hopefully going to make this all a success.
Anyway, thanks.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. So the two water control structures that Gary first talked about, the Wetlands Initiative has already secured funding from National Fish and Wildlife Foundation as kind of a renewal grant for phase one to implement that. So we'd love to move forward with that within the next year or so. The other two, the conceptual designs there at MLK North and Marshalltown, we know recognize need more discussion with you, and it would need fundraising. Both of those would be attractive projects for the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative as well, as they'd reduce nutrient and sediment loading into Lake Michigan. And I'm happy to go back to any questions about the claim as well. I don't know if I addressed all of those well enough.
All right, at the end, so bring it back to the board as far as questions. Let me start with just one question, Mr. Miller. Going back to the heron rookery, did the list of the birds that you had include the blue heron, or is that an egrets, or are those not part of what you're tracking as a part of your program?
Yeah, so those are what we call colonial water birds, because they nest in colonies and nest in trees. So they're not as good of indicators of high-quality wetland. Our focal breeding marsh birds are birds that nest in the marsh, and we call them, if you build it, they will come. When there's quality habitat, they're there. So they're a really good indicator of functional wetland habitat. herons and egrets and cormorants are different. They actually destroy their own habitat over time, and rookeries often shift and move natural processes. Obviously recognize the issue there, that there's been herons in the past, people liked having them there, and now there's not. But they're not our target species for recovering populations, because it'd be even if you created like towers there, you would still have to get lucky for them to come back and claim that territory.
Thank you. Gentlemen?
What's the nature of your engagement with the Corps, Army Corps?
Yeah, so Audubon has an agreement with the Army Corps under the Public Assistance to States, which is where the Army Corps can match their in-kind engineering services, usually to municipalities or state government, but in this case to a nonprofit, where they design hydrological improvements. So they work very closely with Garrett, with Dr. Sullivan and the Wetlands Initiative team to create what they call a master plan, but it's essentially a feasibility of the water control structure improvements that we presented. And they've signed off on it, and we have a final master plan from them.
Okay. I have a second one, Mr. Chairman.
Have at it.
Mr. Sullivan, Dr. Sullivan, I think you mentioned something about actually, you both did. You really talked about the Lake County Parks doing or being responsible for a lot of activities. Obviously, they have a staff, but Lake County is big, and these are just dot blips on the screen. So I do have some concerns about, you know, the nature of ongoing maintenance being performed adequately by Lake County Parks. So to the chairman's point, if there's a way that you guys could broker a conversation to where we understand each other before we would entertain something like that, that would be helpful. You guys are the experts. I mean, you clearly know what needs to be done on a regular basis. We don't, and they probably don't either.
Can I just jump? You know, we recognized from the very beginning that they were going to be integral to this. And as you said, they're a huge organization. They have a lot of responsibilities, and this is, you know, very, you know,
one of
very,
the...
very minor, yeah. But what we've been trying to do is get a dedicated crew that works specifically on these areas within the basin. And so that they're not going to be dragged off to other crews. Their priorities are not going to be taken up by other people. They would be hired specifically just to work on these areas here.
Okay.
And so we're in the process of developing that relationship with them. And we're also in the process of developing a way to fund it.
Right. Thank you.
Any other questions? Nothing about money?
I guess it's my ignorance, but typically when we have a partner like we do with you guys, the $300,000 that was allocated, and somebody submits a claim, we're used to seeing a substantial amount of backup. And I guess just the way that the claim was presented, you know, it was numbers, but not really, until your presentation, you had a little narrative in there, but not really the backup that we're used to seeing. And I didn't know if there was a way that you guys could provide Dan with a little bit more detail, just so that we become more educated on these costs and understand that if we do move forward in the future, how you guys are structured. This was an eye-opener as far as all the effort that goes into planning a project, and I think the first presenters maybe didn't make it that clear.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Commissioner. I'll take that as my ignorance, not yours, on how to work with you all, and I think... you know, we pride ourselves in our thriftiness and leveraging funds, and we've gotten a lot of work done, I think, for the dollars. I think that the gap here is the communication with you all, and we can certainly provide backup. We can provide the invoices from the contractors or even timesheets. It's, you know, we can work that through with Dan, what he'd like, but we've got it all. I know you guys like to see the progress on the ground, too, so we can just make an effort to keep you aware of that that's happening, and Dan's just going to have to expect a lot more texts from me than he's gotten in the past.
Well, and also, Mr. Miller, you know, in trying to engage the community, it helps when you know an activity is going to happen. So if you have things scheduled and there's certain activities throughout the watershed or the project areas, if you have them on the books, if we know about those, that could help engage the community a lot better than what's happened in the past. That's kind of the focus.
Absolutely. So I think we'll take your advice on how to do that. You know, one thing we can have is that calendar of events always available for you. We can send out direct emails to all commissioners about our events and the restoration of the ground. I think we'll take Dan's direction on that.
Outstanding. Gentlemen, thank you, gentlemen. That was outstanding. We appreciate it very much for coming out and putting that together for us.
Can I add one quick thing?
You bet.
Essentially, if anyone of you people in that group would like to go out and see the work, what we're doing, or again, you know, take a tour or anything along those lines, we'd be happy to do that and show you essentially, you know, on the ground what's going on and what our plans are and where we're going.
Right.
So anyway, just let us know.
Thank you. I'm going to wait till it snows.
Yeah, June and July levee walks could be great. We'll have community members already participating in that. We'll invite you along.
Outstanding. Thank you. Anything else, Dylan? All right, moving right along. We've got more work to do. Other issues, new business.
Mr. Chair, I would like to make a motion to deny the Lake County Parks Watershed application for the Saros land acquisition at future Lake Hills County Park.
Second. There's a motion and a second. Mr. Repay, brief overview, please.
Yeah, this is an application that they put in earlier in the year about purchasing property. They had a couple other opportunities or grants. However, they were looking, I believe, $800,000 from us for the purchase. I think it's a little bit much for what it could provide.
Thank you. Any discussion on this? There's a motion and a second. Mrs. Lambert.
Tom Orsinski.
Yes.
Tom Gazdecki.
Yes.
Anthony Brodnix.
Yes.
Dave Castellanos.
Yes.
Ron Ware.
Yes.
Robert Ochi.
Yes.
LaVon Whitaker.
Yes.
William Baker.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I move to authorize the chairman to sign the deed for the Portage Marina to the City of Portage pending legal review and finalization of the interlocal agreement executed in 2005.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. Mr. Repay or Mr. Wicklund, this one's
I defer.
Executive summary, sir.
Yes, I'll do it quickly. The Portage Marina is a marina for most people's edification in Porter County, operated by the City of Portage. I got a strange call about 3 months ago, and it was from the city attorney of Portage, and he indicated that the property upon which the marina operates is owned by the commission, meaning us. I said, well, that's all well and good, but why don't we get some title work? We'll do a title search and find out, you know, what's going on. So we did, and the title search did provide that, in fact, the commission is in title, meaning fee simple title, they own it. Further research revealed that there was a contract dating back, as you indicated, as part of your motion, 2005, that, in fact, documented this agreement, and that is the transfer from the commission to the City of Portage. It appears that only the deed was not signed. Everything else was signed. The contract, the exhibits were attached. That's what it's all about. And the City of Portage has asked that the property be transferred per the deed that's attached to the contract.
So I'm hearing more administrative than anything else?
Yes.
Correct.
Yep.
Any other questions with regards to this? Either or none. Mrs. Lambert.
Tom Wyszynski.
Yes.
Tom Gazdecki.
Yes.
Anthony Brodnix.
Yes.
Dave Castellanos.
Yes.
Ron Ware.
Yes.
Robert Ochi.
Yes.
LaVon Whitaker.
Yes.
William Baker.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion to approve an extension of time for the completion of the National Audubon Society Little Calumet Marsh Bird Conservation Area Project until June 30th, 2021.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion after the presentations that we make? Either none. Mrs. Lambert.
Tom Orsinski.
Yes.
Tom Gazdecki.
Yes.
Anthony Brodnix.
Yes.
Dave Castellanos.
Yes.
Ron Ware.
Yes.
Robert Ochi.
Yes.
LaVon Whitaker.
Yes.
William Baker.
Yes. Thank you very much. Mr. Miller, before I forget, is there any way, if you'd be so kind, to send that presentation to Mr. Repay so we could also have that?
Yes.
That's outstanding. Thank you. All right, next up, my favorite part, statements of the board from the floor in person. This is the first time since the tour has been canceled back in February 2021. If you'd like to address the board, please step up to the microphone, state your name, have at it, help us move this along. Hello.
Hello, Sandy O'Brien.
Hi, Sandy.
Good evening. Well, I just wanted to thank you in person for voting for the Insava Geo property and over. That was wonderful. So wonderful for quality of life, wonderful for stormwater retention, and wonderful for just general ecology, saving all those big giant trees and everything. It's really good, and we sure appreciate it.
Wow, thank you, Sandy. Nice seeing you again. Yes, ma'am. It's Ruth.
Hi, guys.
Mars.
Say your name, Ruth. Nobody knows you except us.
I'm Ruth Bors. Is this on?
I don't think so. Can't help out. You know, doodle it.
It's its power. I'm taking notes.
Taking notes.
Look.
What? Wrote down that Sandy gave us the compliment.
I did. I wanted that for the record.
Thank you. Yes, I'm Ruth Bors, and live on the Southmore portion of the river. And I want to update you on what's going on and let you know that everything's going well. The water worked well for the winter, during the storms, during everything else. It's working, it's going up, it's going down. We're starting to get some of our birds back. We've got two pair of beautiful wood ducks that are in my yard all day. We've got many of the mallards back. I'm just talking about blue heron. We have blue heron. I saw him fly in today. And everything's moving well, even the beavers, Dan. in the fall, they seem to like our young trees up on the bank. But
you ain't get to those?
We now protect our trees with chicken wire. But I do want to thank Dan, too, for coming out after the big storm in the fall. There was a big cottonwood tree on Dedalo's land that fell into the river, and Dan was right on it, took care of it. So, again, everybody on Southmore loves where they are. Their river's going well, and I want to make sure that anyone on the board is welcome to visit. Just give Dan a call. He'll let me know, and we'll give you a private tour.
I'm the
outstanding.
I said Dan's compliment right
Thank
here.
You.
I saw
That's
that.
Two now. Put him in permanent marker. Anybody else? Oh, Lori. Yes, ma'am. Back on tour. Isn't this more fun in person?
This is so much more fun in person. We're in Zulno, Forest Avenue. I don't want Dan's head to get big.
But.
Yeah. But, so in that vein, they mentioned that your new logo is a bird we don't have. What was wrong with the beaver? We have plenty of those.
I was criticized about the beaver.
Okay, just a point of that. The gentleman said that bird doesn't stay here. Isn't here anymore. Beaver we had.
Strike that from the record.
So you're here to deflate him.
I'm here to deflate him. I want to bring him back down to earth.
They told me to change it.
When have you not learned not to listen to them?
That's it.
Secretary's taking notes.
Anyway, I'm glad to be back in person. Glad to see everybody. I want to thank the commission for the keeping us all informed with Zoom. I miss seeing the waving flag. Somebody had a golf course at one point in time. So I do miss seeing those at Dan's...
beach.
A beach, his desert island.
But not that much.
And again, I want to thank Jody. No, I know that that well is enough. A task to keep
yes.
all those balls in the air. And I am appreciative that that happened. So this was for Jody, Dan,
yeah,
back on the bottom list.
Thank you very much.
I'll walk home.
Thank you.
All right, anybody else? Going once? Going twice? Close that part of it. Next meeting is scheduled always for the third Wednesday of every month, the 19th. Check the website for the location. Go down the line. Anything to say, Mr. Ware?
No, not at this time. Just great to see everybody out here in person. Thanks for coming.
Mr. Whitaker.
I have one question for Dan. Dan, does it seem like inspections from the Corps are earlier this year?
They've been moving around a lot, and they're because of their manpower. Okay. They have to bring some folks in from Detroit and some folks from other districts to do it. So yeah, it's difficult. We usually did it in May. They moved them up to April. Makes our cutting grass difficult. So okay. The next ones aren't after this. After Gary does theirs and part of Griffith, which is Arbogast, then the Hammond, Munster, and Highland ones are June 21st.
Okay.
So they space them out also so they can finish their reports in a timely fashion.
All right, thanks. I would just like to thank everyone for coming out. As usual, it's good to see everyone back in person as well. And us in full swing, in person, taking care of business. It's just a different feel for it. Great presentations, I will say. Those were some of the much better and thorough presentations that I've seen in a long time. I really appreciate you guys taking whatever feedback that you've been given in the past and really enhancing the presentation so that we can really follow along and know what questions to really ask so that we can be more effective in our responsibility. I just want to continue to encourage everyone to continue to stay involved and continue to pray for our country, our nation as a whole, and our citizens. That's all, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Wyszlinski.
Just building on what Commissioner Whitaker said, when you guys come and give presentations like that, it helps us a lot. It helps us understand what's going on out there, and we encourage it, and we like to keep seeing it. Thank you.
Mr. Gazdecki.
I'd like to thank everybody for coming out. It's great to be back in action, in person. Makes a big difference, and I agree with the other commissioners. The presentations tonight were outstanding, and every time it seems to get better and better. And just looking at the project tracker, Danny, we've done almost $28 million worth of work, either in place or currently in progress. And you know, our costs have been very controlled, and I'm extremely proud of the commissioners that I serve with. I think they've done an outstanding job. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Broadnax.
Yeah, ditto on being able to see everybody, it's good. Also ditto on the presentations, very good today, excellent. And also, thank you, Ms. Zolno, for reminding me, because I meant to do this at the last meeting as well, because I wanted to thank Jody personally for managing all of the Zoom meetings. I know I'm texting her or messaging her during the meeting, and probably 10 other people are, and you have 25 people, you know, random, you know, non-commissioners probably trying to raise their hands, and also, you know, keeping notes as well. So on today, which is Administrative Professionals Day, special shout out to Jody. Thank you so much for what you do all the time.
You're welcome. Mr. Ochi.
No, nothing to add. Just good to be back, and thank you also, Jody. It's a lot to do in those 13 months that we're gone.
Thank you.
Outstanding. Mr. Castellanos.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I'd like to congratulate Mr. Tony Wolf for the Sierra Group for an excellent presentation, and also for the Audubon Group, Mr. Nat Miller and Dr. Sullivan. Excellent report, and I had a chance to go out with the Audubon Society group, and I really learned a lot. I have a request, though, for the Audubon. I understand when I was out there, they said that the watershed in North Indiana is one of the unique watersheds in the world. And I'd like to know that if that's the case, wouldn't it be nice if the Audubon could put a satellite office in Northwest Indiana so that people from the region as well as the United States can come and visit and at the same time get the same presentation like you and Dr. Sullivan have given us. So that's my request. Thank you.
Thank you. That's it. Motion to adjourn. So move. Second.
Second.
Thanks, everybody, for helping us make it a bad place to live. Be safe.